Yeah, so I apologize. The meeting minutes from June 9th did not get completed.
Okay.
So at the August, I believe it's 18th meeting,
this one
we'll have three sets of meeting minutes to approve that.
Okay. Perfect. Next time. All right. Are we... Recordings are working? Thank you, Don. Tonight we're holding a public hearing regarding application number DR15-08 for the addition of two dormers on the historic home at 1562 Buck Street. This is a quasi-judicial decision. Unlike in legislative hearings where personal opinion may come into play, quasi-judicial rulings must be grounded in the relevant code, and if the application meets the code, the board must approve it. The hearing will proceed as follows. After the preliminary legal matters, staff will make a presentation, followed by the applicant, then members of the audience. Finally, there will be time for rebuttal by the applicant. If you would like to speak regarding an agenda item, please complete a sign-in testimony form located at the table in the hallway and submit it to staff now. You must fill out a separate form for each agenda item. When you are called to testify, you'll have up to 3 minutes to speak. The applicant will have 20 minutes initially, plus 10 for rebuttal. The commission members may ask questions of the applicant, staff, and anyone else who testifies. I now call to order the public hearing. I will ask the assistant city attorney to cover the preliminary legal matters.
Thank you, Chair Peterson. The applicant has the burden of proving the application is consistent with the City of Westlands Community Development Code Comprehensive Plan and applicable municipal code provision. The criteria that must be addressed in this hearing are Chapter 13, R5 Zoning, Chapter 25, Historic Resources, and Chapter 99, Quasi-Judicial Decision Making. Any testimony or evidence that speakers give tonight must be directed to these criteria or some other criteria in the code or comprehensive plan that the speaker believes should apply to this decision. If the testimony would be repetitious, but you would like the opportunity to appeal the decision, you must sign the sign-in testimony form. Only those who have appeared before the historic review board in person or in writing will stand to appeal this item to the city council. Prior to the conclusion of the first public hearing on application, the applicant or anyone who takes part in the hearing may request a continuance or ask that the record be left open to present additional information. If there is such a request, the historic review board will either continue the public hearing with a date or leave the record open for at least 7 days for additional written testimony, argument, or written evidence. Failure to raise an issue accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to allow the historic review board and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue precludes appeal to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. Now moving into the specific topics for tonight, do any members of the historic review board wish to declare a potential or actual conflict of interest or bias on this application? Seeing none, do any members of the historic review board wish to report any site visits or ex parte contacts for this application?
Just a site visit, driving by.
Did you learn anything outside of what was in the application that will impact your decision tonight?
No.
Okay. Does any member of the audience wish to challenge the jurisdiction of the historic review board here this matter? Seeing no challenges, does any member of the audience wish to challenge the impartiality or ex parte disclosures of any member of the historic review board? No. So, Chair Peterson, I think that concludes legal matters.
Thank you. Let's proceed to the staff presentation.
All right. Thank you, Chair Peterson. I'm Darren Wise, Associate Planner, City of Westlands. And the proposal before you tonight is to add two dormers to the historic home at 1562 Buck Street. One dormer will be on the north elevation of the home, which is the front of the home, and the second would be on the south or the rear elevation of the home. So at the close of the public hearing tonight, we hope that the board could agree on a decision to either approve the conditions or deny the application. So a little property characteristics. The home is an individually designated local landmark in the city of Westland. It's an eligible contributing historic home located in the Bolton neighborhood, a couple of blocks south of the fire station. It was built around 1900. It's a vernacular style. It's a R5 zoning, which has a 5,000 square foot lot. All of the surrounding properties are also 5,000 square foot R5 zoning. The applicant and owner, Bonnie Mangini, she is with us tonight. A little proposal background. The application was submitted on June 4th, being complete on the 19th of June. The notice requirements is outlined in the community development code of the internet. And at this point, we have received no public comment. There have been two previous approvals for this property. The first being in 2008, before Westland had a historic review board, Clackamas County Historic Review Board approved a second story addition on the rear of the home. And very little was done with that approval, but there was an internal stairwell completed as part of that approval. And that was the previous owner of the home. And in 2012, when Ms. Mangini owned, taking over ownership of the home, she came in and got approval from the Westland Historic Resource Board to change the window sizes on the side and rear elevations of the home. So some existing conditions. The home sits on the south side of Buck Street, between homes and urban streets. It has a truncated hip roof with a dashboard, shiplap siding. As you can see, the second story addition was never completed, even though it was approved in 2008. The applicant provided a rendering of what the front elevation could look like with a dormer. Addition as part of the packet that we received and part of our application materials. The applicant also provided photos that show the proposed siding that would be used on the dormers. This is the same other these pictures from the approval in 2012 when she changed some of the window sizes and matched the new siding with the old siding. It matched extremely well. I was also out there on a site visit, and I think you really did not tell the difference between the new and old siding. It's located. The applicant is also proposing to install wood or wood clad windows on the dormers to be consistent with the existing windows. So, staff has reviewed the application against the applicable criteria, primarily. Community Development Code, Chapter 25.030, which are the permitted uses under historic resources. Also, Community Development Code 25.040, which is the historic design review processes. And then Community Development Code 25.060, design standards, particularly standards for alterations and additions. And based on the review of the applicable criteria, staff has found that the proposed dormers are not uncommon on homes built in this area, including four-square and Edison-style type of homes, and the size and scale is appropriate to the size of the home. Proposed dormers will not alter the structural integrity of the home, and could be removed in the future if necessary. And massing is designed to protect the integrity of the existing home. And also the proposed dorm windows, siding, and shingles will be compatible with existing materials. And the window and siding replacement in 2004 is really indistinguishable from the existing historic materials. So the recommendation would be the historic review board approve the historic design review application for the addition of two dormers, subject to the following condition, which would be the project conforms to the plans, elevations, and narrative submitted by the applicant, and included in exhibit HRB-4. That's my stack report. Any questions?
Thank you. Are there any brief questions for staff before we move on to the presentation by the applicant? Okay. Let's continue to your presentation.
Okay, well, start out with my little sheet here that I went around if, all the neighbors.
Before you start, would you please give us your name and address?
I'm Bonnie Van Jean, and I'm the owner of 1562 Buck Street, Westland.
Excellent. Thank you.
And I went around to my neighbors. It was a nice way to meet some of the ones I haven't met yet. And I showed them all the images of what I plan to do. And nobody was against my plan. They were really happy to see. The house was empty for a few years when I bought it because it was pretty torn up on the inside and nobody wanted to deal with it. And so they all are very glad that it's become a living part of the neighborhood again. It's only 900 square feet, and the upstairs would allow at least 200 square feet more. So that would be, right now my bedroom is 7.5 feet by 11 feet. Because when they put the stairwell in, they took a bedroom out. And what I'm actually using as a bedroom was the laundry room. So this would be a really great thing for me to be able to have that space upstairs. Push that right up to 1,100 square feet. So, I don't know if you ever saw the previous owners, what they had gotten okayed, the two-story addition on the rear. It was literally this monster box that was going to be just kind of attached to the back of that house. I would say it was probably at least 2,000 square feet for that addition, right? Not 200, really.
I'm not sure what the size of that
is. And it was a really, really, really big addition, so... actually, I showed you little drawings for my neighbors because, I mean, if you can see this, this is my little dormer that I'm asking for. And the previous owners got this big monster thing okay for the back of the house. So, in comparison, I think I'm actually trying to embrace the house the way it is. I love my house. It's a great little house. Most people can't stand 900 square feet. That's like a family room. So, but it's okay for us. And I did a lot of research on other houses from the era. And I think 100 years ago when that house was built, it was more like a fishing shack or something. It wasn't meant to have more ornamentation because it wasn't really an urban house back then. So now it's part of the urban fabric. And I didn't see any examples where the dormers were on the side, because in the old style, you really wanted to embrace your neighborhood. And eyes on the street is what made neighborhoods safe. And so I would really like to see that. I think the house could be really charming with that window on the front. So that I gave you like several different styles of how, what kind of dormer it would be. I kind of wanted a slide open window, but I can understand how that might not be historically correct. And my biggest problem is that everything has to be made for egress, so people don't get trapped up there in a fire. So having all these different things to try and juggle, I try to bring out as many different options as I could think of, you know, shed roofs, gable roofs, whatever, and hope we could, you know, that I could get some feedback from you. I have talked to several, at least six different contractors now, and but I can't really move forward until we decide if and what we think would be the preference as far as the style of the dormer. So all the ones in the samples that I had were all like the gable dormers. That page is with all the things on there?
Yes.
See, none of these show a dormer on the side of the house. They all are in the front. And although I understand how you don't want to, you know, take away anything from the historic homes in the neighborhood. I think it would look very peculiar if there was a dormer on the side. And the other problem is, from this
this picture here that you have. The stairwell that was put in is on the west side of the house. And so there can't be a dormer on that wall because of the stairway. And then that also makes it so that the rooms have to be divided on this east wall. And so that wouldn't leave enough space, I don't think, on the east wall once you cut that in half to put a dormer of a size that you would need for the egress window. So those are some more of the constrictions that I was trying to work around. And but to be quite honest, I think the house would look a whole lot cuter with it on the front of it, not stuck on the side. So I hope that I gave you enough information to make a decision.
Yes.
One of the other things that that aside from the dormers themselves that have become an issue, like I said, I talked to about six contractors, and these submittal requirements number 19. I don't know if anybody noticed that note that I put in there. The city's regulations say that they need to have a foundation wall on that one stretch, on the east stretch of the old house. The other walls all have the footer in there. All of the contractors that have come over, and I did have, when I moved in, a structural engineer as well, look at the house, and they all say that we're putting minimum weight up there, and there really doesn't need to be that footer put in there. And if they do have to put the footer in, they're going to have to tear out the porch, or the floor of the porch at least, in order to be able to get back to the wall where the city wants the floor, where the city wants the footer. So I wrote in there that I would, you know, consider, you know, getting a structural engineer if that was necessary, but like I said, I had six professionals come over and they all said, you don't need to do that. You're not adding the second floor, you're just popping a window in. So I just wanted to bring that up as an issue and maybe I could get some feedback from you guys because everybody keeps telling me you guys are professional architects and stuff. And so that you have some really great ideas that I can get from you while I'm here. So I'm just stumbling forward as best I can. And if anybody wants to, you know, make a comment, I'd love to hear that.
Thank you. That's great. I think we'd like to probably ask you a couple of questions
Sure.
and about specific design. First on the foundation piece, that's hard for us because it's not within our jurisdiction.
Uh-huh.
It's going to fall back on the building department
Okay.
and their structural requirements.
Right.
I had a couple questions for you. So you like this style right here, these dormers?
Well, I liked all of the ones that I drew up. The one he used in the presentation, because those houses, I could not find one that comes up on the side and then has a little flat area like mine.
We won't. Yeah.
And
these are all
so
like,
he considered, I called it a mansard roof because I didn't know what to call it. He said it was a hip roof. But he said that maybe we should mimic that existing roof.
Well, typically what happens in a house like that, these are all hipped dormers, they're not gable dormers, and this would be probably more appropriate for your house, but the pitch that you have on your house right now, typically that dormer that comes out from the roof usually matches that pitch, so it has the same plane. And the other part of this is, which you brought up, a good part of this is you've got a picture of a casement window here.
Right.
And pretty much your only option here is to do something like this in order to gain egress and still have a dormer that's in proportion.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, for a casement window, you've got to have about 2'6" by about 44 inches to 48. And that window can't be more than 44 inches to the ground, to the floor. So you're kind of limited on height for that window for meeting egress, and then you're also limited by width and height of the window itself. So really, when you're showing these pictures, what's really going to dictate your dormer is your window and the height off the floor. So
I think we added I went to Home Depot and where they came up, they gave me the sizes of the window that would be needed to fulfill the egress. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They showed you either a 36 wide or a 48 wide by 42 high.
Right. Window. That's what they told me.
Yeah, 46 wide would be pretty wide and probably out of proportion. I mean, if you could get a casement window that's in proportion, I'm just giving you the minimums.
Right.
And whoever's doing a drawing should know aesthetically how to create that. But really, to try and mimic the existing pitch of the roof is really crucial, as well as putting a hipped gable on there. That would match. That would look better.
I included that. But I have to say, I started with Sarah, and then moved to Peter, and then to Darren. So, and I can't remember who said what to me, one breath somebody would say they want you to match the scale and the existing character of the house. And then somebody else came along and said, well, we don't want it to match the character exactly because we want people to know that it's not part of the original house.
Yeah.
And so I kind of...
There's a happy medium. You don't want it to look like a sore thumb, but you don't want it to,
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so that's why, I added this. This is the casement, this last one. That was the last one that I did. So that was like an up and down thing. And then I showed the gable, and then this one that mimics the existing roof. Now, the contractor that I talked to about this, he said that this would be good because you can actually get a little more headroom inside the house when you did it this way. Okay, and it's supposed to be where it's flat on top so that it kind of mimics the roof that's there. Okay, so I did these drawings, so they might not be exactly what the contractor had in mind, but, and then there's the shed roof, which would be that would take a lot more space out of there. So, I have to try and... Now, the other thing is on these drawings, on these houses, the thing is, they all are kind of a horizontal nature. But if you look close at these windows, I don't think any of these are going to be egress windows.
No, because all those windows you're looking at are in houses from the 20s.
Right, exactly.
And all of those houses actually have a gabled roof that goes all the way through. Those are more of a craftsman style. Yours is more of a vernacular with the hip all around.
Right.
So yours is more unique, and those are typical craftsman bungalows that you're looking at. But the French hipped gable that's there is pretty appropriate for most of those styles, including yours.
Right.
You're going downer with putting a flat mansard roof style there, then you've got a flat roof that has to be dealt with in a more expensive manner.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So if you were to gable that, you would actually get more headroom than what one of your guys is talking about. And it would look more appropriate.
That's good with me, but like I said, these do show kind of a horizontal look, which is one of the reasons why I put the horizontal window in, but these all open this way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which was the style. And so one of the people that I already talked to, they said that so that they wanted to get away from the windows that slid open. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because of the fact that it was more modern to me.
Yeah, it would be appropriate. Darren, did you get the email that I sent you?
I did, and I've got that. Sorry.
Is that possible to pull that up?
I have a picture on the PowerPoint, so let me turn that up.
There you go. Can you see that?
Yeah.
So, I only know we were going to my son's graduation up at University of Portland last month for high school. I drove down a busy street, I saw this, and it just happened to be when Peter was asking me about this. I quickly took that picture because it was just ironic that the day before he was asking that, I drove by, and that's kind of similar to your house in some respects as far as the roof goes.
Right.
And I just thought, for what it was worth, you know, that's kind of sticking out, but it was more just, hey, here's something that looks kind of like your house that kind of has a dormer kind of gate. But not to say that it's exactly your house, but it's the same thing. When I looked around, it kind of had the same roof style.
I tried to find some images of houses with the flat part on top, but
you see how that's got the hip roof on the dormer, and it follows the pitch of the house. And there's a house that was probably done probably at the time the house was built, you know, probably in the teens. So.
Well, that would be fine. I mean, I want to be able to use the space, because there is a lot of space upstairs, and there's just pretty high.
Yeah.
So
anyway, that was just a thank you for putting that up.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for taking the picture.
Yeah, I was doing it illegally while I was driving.
You could have been walking on the sidewalk.
You know,
anyhow.
So, of all the options that you've put forth, do you have a preference? Do you have a favorite?
Not really, no. No, not really.
Okay.
I think the smallest window to fulfill the egress is fine with me. The part that I like about the sliding window is if we need to put an air conditioner in there, there's a place for an air conditioner. But
you'd never find a slider on something like that.
No,
yeah.
I know.
That's right. But a casement gets you the look and still gets you the egress.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's so I'm perfectly okay as long as there's some light, some air moving, and that's why I kind of like the north and south, is so that the windows are, you know, so we can get a breeze going through there with some fans. And because I have to say, when I took this this around to all my neighbors, several of them on the street live in historic homes that have dormers that got put in upstairs, and they tell me that it is so hot up in their attics that it's just incredible. So I'm trying to, you know, once we decide on this, and then I can move forward and see if I can maybe get that spray foam insulation so that, but I don't know. Because you still need a gap. Do you need a gap for that in the attic? Well, then we're back to the harsh insulation. So that one there is the one that I put on the top, because that one I think, unfortunately, it's hard to get from AutoCAD into Photoshop. I don't know why they make it that hard to get them to move from those two programs, but you have to go through Illustrator and then in Photoshop, and so I didn't get this one dark enough, but this one is the one with the casement windows on.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I have one question.
Okay.
You were just mentioning your AutoCAD versus Photoshop renderings. In your Photoshop rendering, you had a 3-panel wide, and in most of the pictures you were using, and then I guess what you based your AutoCAD diagrams off of, you had a 2-panel wide. Did you have a preference, or were you kind of thinking you like the look of that 3, or is it just what you wanted?
One of the people said that they want to try and match it to the windows downstairs.
Okay.
And the one, whatever goes
above
should look like what's down below. And these are only 27 inches wide.
But are those 2/1?
When
you look at the panels on the top, when you look at single hungs, the grid.
It looks like it's a 6/1 in these photos.
I can't see.
It's
a 6/1.
6-foot windows. They're 6 feet by 27.
You're talking about seeing the panes. Right?
Yeah.
So the way that
should have said panes, not panels.
So there's like 9 panes on these windows downstairs.
So like right here, you've got something like this. Where there's all these.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is called a 6/1.
Okay.
As
if there's 6 small lights above over 1 larger light below.
Well, my windows that are in this house are just plain old vinyl windows from Home Depot that someone else put in without getting an okay from the historic review board.
Interesting.
I don't know whether you charged them or what you did. That was before my time.
Sure, it was before our time. Totally before our time too.
And but so we want to try and use the same style upstairs. So this one here, these are long and narrow. So that's another plus for the casement window.
Yes.
So that dormer, see on that house there, there's the wide window downstairs, and then there's the narrow window upstairs. On my house, I have narrow windows downstairs, and then I will have a narrow window up above it that kind of, you know, just kind of repeats the same style. Only I was thinking that there's going to be, and, well, what if it's the casement window, it's going to be all panels, right?
I think that's enough. I think we're good. Thank you. We'll close the public hearing and take a minute to discuss and deliberate. We're looking at window widths and the overall dormer design, primarily. Anybody want to start us off? Personally, I like the hipped look just because it's a hipped roof. I think that a straight gable, it wouldn't be as appropriate architecturally. A hipped gable. I think that the what she's called the mansard dormer would be okay, but I think a hipped gable maybe makes more sense.
But I agree.
Okay. And then as far as window size and proportion, the dormer was shown as overall 60 inches wide. And I think that if you put a 48-inch window in there, you only have 6 inches on either side, which is going to be barely enough for trim boards. And I guess my own sensitivities say to have a little bit of siding in addition to corner boards would make sense. Yes. And probably look more in proportion with the rest of our house.
Yeah. I agree. Well, we could say whatever that has to be a casement to meet minimum egress.
Mm-hmm.
What about, should it have grids? Should we talk about that? Should it be something simple? Should it be blank? Should it copy the windows that were replaced below? Anybody?
I think it'd be nice if it conformed with the other windows that were replaced.
Can you guys make sure you're voice?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Sorry.
I think if she could get a 6/1 to match the double hungs that she has below, that might look nice. I don't know if you can do that in the casement.
You can, but it would be really busy.
Yeah.
To try and squeeze 6 grids. If it's 4, you know, because those ones down below are 6 feet tall or tall.
Oh.
So you could.
Sure, and she's only 42.
Yeah, or 44 or whatever. So how do you either do something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Or, which would probably be fine. I don't know, it's just 6 grids.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody?
It matches the sort of.
At least you get part of the up downstairs, I
think. The character of tall and narrow, I think, you know.
Is important.
That's part of it.
So you could just keep it this way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the dormer, that's the grids.
Yeah.
So it's grids, dormer style, right?
Dormer is a hipped gable.
Mm-hmm. The grids would be 6.
6.
Which would be, in this case, 2x3.
Width of window?
A window to it'd be casement window.
Casement
right,
window
to meet minimum egress.
Yep. For egress, and that it needs to be a wood or wood clad.
Do I have to open this to ask the staff a question?
No, I think we can.
Can I just ask? Do you know Does it have to be wood, or can it be fiberglass clad or aluminum clad?
It can be.
I believe it can be any of those three, correct?
Yeah, it can be any of three.
Yep. So we can make that option as three options.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I don't know that we can even make a comment on the footing. That is really sort of...
That's just not our purview.
Yeah, deferred to the building department.
Yeah. So that could be whatever the recommendation...
I think we could... John, would you like to summarize all that into a motion since
I'll
you took
try.
Such nice
no.
notes?
Let's see. I would motion to approve. What's the number?
DR 1508.
Oh, there it is. Okay. I would move to approve DR 1508, and subject to the following conditions of approval: that the dormers be tipped gables, that the windows be casement to meet minimum egress, that they have a grid pattern of 2/3, which would give 6 panels, and that the window can be any of the following: aluminum clad, fiberglass clad, or wood. And direct staff to prepare a final decision and order based on the findings in the hearing staff report. So that's my motion. Does that sound clear enough? Should I say it again?
Well, I have a question. What is
you can't.
Close. Sorry.
I'll tell you.
We can explain.
Okay.
No,
is that not clear enough?
The idea...
I think that was...
Yes.
I think that was... Quite clear. You said 2/3 windows for a total of 6 panels.
Six grids.
Two panels wide, three panels high.
Yeah, so that it looks like there's, it's a,
So that it closely matches the upper half of the lower level windows.
So that's the motion.
Second.
So,
thank you. Darren, can you take a vote, please?
Alright, Mrs. Lewis.
Aye.
Mr. McLaughlin.
Aye.
Mr. Sherwood.
Aye.
Chair Peterson.
Aye.
Motion passes.
Alright.
Thank you to all that came tonight. An editorial comment for you. Thank you for the effort in preparing this.
Yeah.
This was very thorough and made our job easy. And we appreciate
thank it.
Thank you. It'll really look nice.
My house, so we just want to keep making it better. That's all I can say.
Appreciate that. With that, we'll close this meeting. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. The meeting's not actually closed. The hearing is closed.
Yeah.
And we can move on to business.
Exciting things, it sounds like.
From staff. Business from the Historic Review Board. I suppose I have some business.
Thank you.
Thank you. Business from the Historic Review Board. At our last meeting, we put together a letter. In support of the Arch Bridge project. I was supposed to go and read that to council last night and had a conflict that came up last minute, wasn't able to make it, so I'm going to have to go to the next one.
There were 38 people here last night, so
oh
there
my goodness.
Will be plenty of opportunities going forward. I was in attendance.
38 people that wanted to speak?
That testified. We were here until 10.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah,
in regards to that project?
Here and there and everywhere. There are about 4 things people testified on.
Wow.
There will be opportunity going forward. Let's
perfect.
That letter.
We will continue to. I'll put it on my calendar and try
that's
and make
brutal.
It to the next one. That's impressive.
And Chair, I'm happy to help monitor and possibly read something into the record and any further scheduling concerns.
Okay, sounds good. Appreciate that.
Just for clarification, just on the arts bridge issue.
Yes.
It was very confusing. There were multiple votes on what to do with the next steps of Mark Arch Bridge. They all failed. And so with the lack of action, right now we're working under the resolution. So my recommendation would be, if you have a letter you want to submit, I would submit it at your next meeting that you can attend. Because I'm not sure the timing when they're going to raise this question again. So if you want to just get something on the record, you can get it on the record.
So it should be on the record now. So we've drafted a letter, signed it, and delivered it to the city, and it was to make it to Planning Council, or the Planning Commission. Planning Commission.
I will ask if it was directed towards Council, or if it was directed for Planning Commission.
It's left in the hands of Mr. Kerr.
Right, because the outcome, the initial action last night that was requested, the initial vote was to stop all action. And that vote did pass.
Okay.
And there was a vote to have a meeting with Archbridge, PC, and City Council. That vote didn't pass. And then there was a parliamentarian action to force a special meeting, and I believe... Well, that's on the tape and everything. I don't know. I had all my friends see it.
They're compelled to hold a meeting.
Yes, that is correct. There will be a special meeting on a date to be determined, most likely in August. And that special meeting will convene the Planning Commission, the Arch Bridge Task Force, and the Council.
And why am I saying all this? Is if you want your contents to be considered of the letter,
mm-hmm.
it seems best not to wait for the Planning Commission. I will ask Chris where that's going,
yeah.
but it seems to me you would want that letter presented so that it would be considered at any deliberation on that issue.
Yes.
So that's why I'm saying all that.
Yeah, it needs to get to the next meeting.
It seemed confusing. Last night was a long meeting, and it was interesting.
Okay. Well, we'll make sure that if it's not... me, somebody reads it into the record at the next meeting.
So just staff will confirm with Chris Kerr that letter has been transmitted to the Council and Planning Commission.
Yes, okay. Please. Any other business from the board? Can we get an update from staff on some recent developments?
I believe what you want to hear is an outcome on Council's decision on the web issue,
yes.
and maybe some additional discussion on... What I'd like to do is have Megan give that discussion that she wrote, if she doesn't mind.
And I can do that. I don't know exactly what you want to know, if you want me to just answer your questions or just tell you essentially what's happened. I don't know if any of you have read the findings that the council adopted last night. So you're kind of shaking now. So just to very, so what I'll do is just very briefly summarize the findings. You are all well aware of the record. You know that there was no objection in the record, and therefore the criteria for an objection by the applicant couldn't be met. The findings are based on the burden of proof shifting from the applicant to the city. The city council held that the city was responsible to show that the citizens living in the historic district received individualized notice of the fact that the zone was changing at the time of designation in 1983. Now, in 1983, Measure 56, which now requires us to give individualized notice, did not exist. So we were not required, the city was not required to do that by law in 1983. And as, again, you're well aware of the record, we also were not required to retain all of the items that we retain now for our land use action. So the city was unable to show the actual notice, even the generalized legislative notice that was in the paper, although we did have what you had concluded was substantial evidence in the record that plenty of notice had been given, opportunities for a hearing were available. So that is ultimately what the council decided, was that there was not substantial evidence in the record to show that there was individualized notice given to the individual property owners in historic districts at the time of the rezoning in 1983. And that's what the findings are based on. And so because of that, the applicant never had to prove each of the criteria that you had evaluated. Because again, the city couldn't meet the burden of proof showing that there was substantial evidence that notice would be given.
So I guess what kind of precedent does that set now for the existing homes within the district?
I can tell you what the city attorney essentially stated last night at the hearing. This is just a general summary of what the city attorney stated. He stated that basically any forthcoming applicant who may request removal in the future could bring forward different facts, and that the record for that case would be different. And because the facts would be different for another case, and because it would be up to each individual counselor or commissioner or board member to review the facts at that time, the case, although it sets some guidelines for the council or a future hearing body to consider, it leaves a possibility of a different decision because another applicant can bring forward different facts. And he also mentioned that there's, and I think I mentioned this to all of you at the hearing that we had in June, that there's a current case up at the Supreme Court, and this area of law is changing rapidly, and so of course this decision that the council made could also be affected by any future court cases because they would dictate essentially how the Oregon statute has to be interpreted in the future.
So did their attorney argue on that before the council?
No, Mr. You mean at the council hearing on July 13th? Mm-hmm. He gave a very similar presentation to the presentation that he gave to the HRB. I would say that the largest difference between the two presentations was that he did not talk about subsection 1 of the statute, 197.7772.1, which you and your findings that the board adopted were very clear that subsection 1 didn't apply because he hadn't made a request, and again, the designation was before 1995. So he didn't really talk about that, but he did talk about the very same types of acts he brought forward in front of the HRB regarding notice and the fact that it wasn't clear that his client or the property owner at the time had received any notice. That, you know, mentioned the facts that just because there was a hearing and just because a lot of people came didn't mean that there was actual notice.
So at that meeting, what was the council vote?
The council vote was 2-1. There was an impartiality and bias challenge to Mayor Axelrod. He was recused or disqualified under the code due to the council's vote. And that's why there were three councilors making the decision. And then again, the final vote was 2-1.
Wow.
I have, I guess, kind of two trains of thought, and my first would be, does council have any sort of recommendation or thought on potential re-notice or some sort of conservative read on how we could get ahead of any future challenges? And if not here on the spot, if that's something we could think about for future agenda items.
I was just going to speak to that. I have not heard anything specific from the council, but staff is already thinking in along the same lines and coming up with options and obviously viable options to do exactly that. As you know, in 2013, the city redesignated that district. Mm-hmm. This removal occurred under the subsection 3, going back to the original designation in 1983. It was now protected by the 2013 redesignation. We're going to have to think a little bit about how to protect the district from those types of removals in the future. I think what you're asking is there some way to redesignate where it wouldn't subject the district to this challenge to the 1983 original designation? And so that's what we still need to work out, but it has already crossed our minds that we might want to think along those lines and bring forward some options to the council.
Well, does any of the work for the national designation that, so we have two sort of different mm-hmm. boundaries, was there a different notice that was done when the national designation was done to the people within that
boundary? Frankly, I don't know the process behind the national designation, but what I can tell you is that ORS 197.772 sub 3, which is the pre-1995 section of the statute mm-hmm. for which you recommended removal be denied, it has an exemption for properties with a national designation. So what that means is that if the local designation is imposed on a property and they can show that it was imposed over the objection of the property owner under that pre-1995 section, a property owner can get out as long as their property isn't in the national designation. So there is an exception. So this statute applies and focuses on local designations as opposed to the national designation.
Got it. Okay.
What Tim Reynolds asked, Tim Reynolds is the city attorney, so what he asked, I passed along, this was after the meeting, he said this question is going to come up, and very great job, you asked the question. He said the most cities are awaiting the Supreme Court decision. He said as soon as that decision comes out, that he will do a summary and explain our options. He said that in the meantime, if we get more applications that can consider removal from the district, he, to your question, said he would want to advise council on how the best way to process those would be. So evaluate. If we, first, why react if we're not getting them? And then second, if we do get them, then we should reconsider the process and educate council and move forward. We want to wait.
I think most of the time, this is an exception, not the rule. There's not going to be an exodus, but this is a unique situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I won't speak for him, but that's what I believe his instructions.
Yeah.
Also, so that you're aware, the Oregon Supreme Court case, the Lake Oswego Preservation Society case that the city attorney was referring to, that's going before the Supreme Court in November of this year. So that's for oral argument. They're not expected to lay down a decision until sometime next year. So, and who knows exactly when. It's Oregon Supreme Court, so they can take their time and issue the decision when they feel ready. So it could be a wait.
Thank you.
I guess my second train of thought is just to use this space to kind of speak on the record, having stayed until the end last night. I never knew, I don't know if anybody knew, this room completely shuts down at 10 o'clock. The computers turn off, the screen rolls up, the recording, in all essence, stops. You at home can no longer watch on TV. Why land use and something that is so reliant on the public process was put at the end of the agenda, I don't know. We were in the middle of discussing right as the computer turned off and the screen rolled up. Ironic, since this particular case is because the burden of proof is on the city for keeping records, and I don't know how our records are going to hold up for last night. So I guess just kind of thinking forward about us kind of being proactive and making sure that when we do send something to council, it gets on the agenda at kind of a front-loaded place where public involvement can happen, since people don't normally want to sit for 3 hours before
no. Engaging on a new topic or a new agenda item at the very end of an agenda that's pretty packed. So, yeah.
All right. Excellent.
I think so. I think that's a wrap.
Thank you.
Meeting adjourned.
So the next meeting will be August 18th.
I will not be here.
And it will take place in the police station, down.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, yeah? What's going on?
We're doing something to this room. I'm not sure.
Oh, just for meeting. It's not like a gig.
Yeah. And this room is
going to be cool.
Unavailable, so we're going to
have to pull it out. I am gone.
I might be gone.
You'll be getting notice soon.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, well, I will get in touch with everyone to make sure we're going
to. Mm-hmm. This is impressive.
That should be really good.